Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here in Berlin. And I was actually asked to talk about, to divide my lecture into two segments. The first one is the roadmap to the bomb, to describe briefly Iran's nuclear program, past and present. And the second part of my talk will be about the prospects of economic, diplomatic, and eventually military options available to the West and to Israel. I would like to start my introductory remarks by a citation from Edmund Burke, the thinker and philosopher, who said, "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." I'll say it again. "All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." And this is exactly the point in which we are at the moment. Iran is rushing to have nuclear weapons, and the world is, I wouldn't say is doing nothing, but is doing very, very little. Now, it would be simplistic to say that Iran's desire to have nuclear weapons began with the election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad nearly 3 years ago. The Iranian desire to have a nuclear program is not new. It began with the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, in the 60s. Western nations and Western corporations from France, the United States, Germany, Siemens, for example, were more than eager to sell nuclear technology to Iran. Iran is almost completing its nuclear reactor at Bushehr with the help of the Russians. But this plant was originally constructed by German and French and American companies, and then later on abandoned and destroyed by the Iraqi, partly destroyed by the Iraqi Air Force. After this 73 October Yom Kippur War and the oil crisis which subsequently developed, the Shah of Iran became what I would call the poster boy of U.S. nuclear corporations, because the Shah was advocating, as the American nuclear companies were advocating, the need to use nuclear energy for electricity, to generate electricity, and this was exactly what the Shah wanted. However, it is now clear that the Shah and his people wouldn't come short of nuclear energy for military civilian purposes. I interviewed the founder of the Iranian Atomic Energy Commission, Dr. Etemad, who is now in exile in Paris, and he told me that it was clear to all the people involved in Iran's nuclear program that eventually the ultimate goal of the Shah was to develop parallel to the civilian program a military program. That was partly for the same reasons which the Iranian government now is hoping to develop nuclear bombs, for pride, national pride, regional hegemony, and to improve the industrial scientific infrastructure of Iran, and above all to ensure the survival of the regime. Now, after the revolution, for obvious reasons, the nuclear ambition and the nuclear program came to a halt. First of all, because the revolution diverted its energy to cement and consolidate the revolution. Then the war between Iraq and Iran broke out, and all their energy was diverted, channeled to defend the country and then to go on a counterattack if possible. Thirdly, there was a huge purge in the post-revolutionary days of almost everyone who was somehow associated with the previous regime, including the scientists. Fourthly, there was a brain drain in Iran. A lot of people went into exile, like Dr. Etemad, and the program was basic, and there were no sufficient human and financial resources. So eventually the program came to a halt during the 6, 7, 8 years of the Iran-Iraqi war. Now, it was renewed immediately after the war, after the war between Iraq and Iran, around 88, 89, maybe in early 90. It was renewed, the central figure, the strong power behind renewing the nuclear program was Rafsanjani, as a speaker of the parliament, of the majlis, and later on as a president of the state. There is a kind of enigma whether Khomeini himself supported the notion of nuclear weapons or not. There are controversial arguments about it. Some people tend to say that Khomeini opposed nuclear weapons in principle because it's anti-Islamic tool. Nuclear weapons are weapons of mass destruction, of indiscriminate and kill innocent people, which is against the beliefs of the Islam, women and children and innocent people. But on the other hand, the program was renewed while Khomeini was still alive, and most probably he did support the renewal of the program, not because of religious foundations and beliefs, but basically on political, military, strategic, practical considerations as a result of the war, as lessons that he and his generals and his associates drew from the war. And these lessons were very simple. First of all, Iran needed to develop missiles. Iraq attacked Iran during the war by the Scud missiles and devastated Iranian towns and cities. Secondly, Iraq used gas, chemical weapons, against Iran, Iranian civilians and Iranian servicemen, soldiers. And the world did nothing. The world kind of accepted it for various reasons, for strategic reasons, for supporting Saddam Hussein, and for other considerations. So as a result of these developments, Iran renewed its program. And we are now at a stage of 20 years since Iran started building its program. With the help of China, with the help of Pakistan, all of you probably are aware of the central role played by the father of Pakistan's atomic bomb, Dr. Abdelkader Khan, who with his network of smugglers provided Iran with the drawings and designs of the centrifuges to enrich uranium. And we are facing with 20 years of Iran's lies and concealment and diversions and everything, every effort to try to conceal from the world that actually they are developing a program for military purposes. I mean, the not far from here in Vienna, are the headquarters of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA. And they have detailed in their reports, which are written in a very diplomatic gibberish. On one hand, on the other hand, avoiding to be conclusive, and still in these reports, you will find the evidence that Iran was heading to have nuclear weapons. They lied, and they cheated, and they didn't provide the documentation that they were supposed to provide under their agreements with the IAEA and under their under the regime of the NPT, which Iran is a member of. So all in all, we are now in a situation in which Iran, on top of having a civilian a nuclear program for civilian purposes, whose symbol is the nuclear reactor in Bushehr, which would probably be operational very soon, either by the end of this year or early next year, built with the help of Russian companies and the Russian government. They have a few other sites which are directly linked. There is no other explanation, or barely any other explanation, but that they are for military purposes, to have the nuclear bomb. One site is Natanz, in which Iran is enriching uranium. Another site, is in Isfahan, in which Iran is doing some chemical processing of the uranium process called uranium conversion. Then they are building a nuclear reactor which would be capable of producing plutonium maybe 4 years from now, 5 years from now, in a place called Arak. And they already installed their heavy water facility. And then you have to bear in mind that Iran is actually controlling the full cycle of the of the nuclear program. They have natural uranium, they have mines, they have the chemical facilities in Isfahan in other places. They have for uranium conversion. They have Natanz to enrich uranium. Supposedly, at the moment, they are enriching uranium for civilian purposes as a fuel, as a gasoline, if you wish, for the reactor in Bushehr. But they can also easily enrich uranium at a level which would be sufficient for military purposes to have a bomb. They were caught red-handed with drawings about the warhead. They said in a typical Iranian way, or typical of the Iranian regime. First, they denied that they have such a warhead designs. Then they said it's not a warhead design. And eventually, they kind of admitted, okay, we will agree to investigate it. Originally, they said there are no drawings. It's a fabrication of the Mossad, of the CIA. These are false documents. And then they admitted these are original documents, authentic documents, but they are not of a nuclear warhead, but they are of a re-entry vehicle for a missile, a stage of a missile development. So if you look at this whole spectrum, plus that Iran probably has some other secret sites in which they are doing a lot of research, maybe enriching uranium for a military level, and doing some research and testing for explosion, military explosions, nuclear explosions. It is understood that Iran is very, very close to have its first nuclear bomb. And it is assumed that Iran would not, it would not be sufficient for Iran to produce only one bomb. It doesn't make sense. They'll probably produce immediately in the first production line, if you wish, 2, 3, 4 bombs. And they are very close to that point. There are debates between the various intelligence communities and their estimates, between the Israeli intelligence, the German intelligence, the French, British, American intelligence, whether it would be next year, 2009, or maybe 2010, maybe 2013. Okay, if you are, it depends if you are a pessimist or an optimist. But basically, there is a growing, there is a almost wall-to-wall consensus that Iran is having very soon, will have its first 2, 3, 4 bombs. Okay, now I will go for the second part of my lecture, which is to review the weak reaction of the international community, despite, as I said earlier, Iran's failures to meet UN Security Council's and IAEA's decisions to halt its uranium enrichment activities. As you know, there, the United Nations, the Security Council, reached in the last year and a half several decisions to impose 3 sets of sanctions on Iran. These are weak sanctions, but at least they are in place. They are not very effective, and it doesn't seem that they are stopping the regime of complying with these decisions, and Iran is defying these decisions, but at least there are 3 decisions by the by the UN Security Council. I want to say the following. The only way to avoid a military confrontation is to increase the international pressure on Iran and impose on it effective sanctions. If Western nations, Germany included, do not adhere to the sanctions and impose more effective sanctions, Iran will continue unstoppable in its race to obtain nuclear warheads. It's clear Iran wants the bomb. If the sanctions are not effective and Iran will continue in its race, and it's a matter, as I told you, of a year, maybe 2 years, Israel, feeling to be threatened by Iran, is to be annihilated by Iran, is finding itself, is facing with, I would say, an existential decision on the same scale and level of the 1948 decision, which was made by our first Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, to declare Israel's independence against all odds. It wasn't clear that Israel would be able to defend itself in 48, and there was a debate in Israel immediately before the British left the country, whether to declare independence or not. And eventually David Ben-Gurion decided in favor of declaring independence. And we are, from the Israeli point of view, in the same situation, that we have to make an existential decision. And this existential decision is, if Iran is not stopped by diplomatic and military and economic means, Israel will have to take military action. I have no doubt about it, that this is the dilemma of the Israeli leadership. Now, this estimate, which I am sharing with you, this sentiment, if you wish, is shared by most Israeli political parties and leaders. It is assumed, regardless who will be in power, whether it would be still Ehud Olmert, who is now under tremendous pressure to resign because of corruption, or it will be Defense Minister Ehud Barak or opposition leader Bibi Netanyahu, all of them, or maybe an unknown emerging leader, will face and have to make the decision to attack or not to attack Iran. Now, the time frame is 2009 and 2011. And as I said, there are differences in the estimate. Nuclear Iran possesses a threat not only to the very existence of Israel, but to its neighbors, especially to Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, and particularly to Saudi Arabia, and basically to the stability of the whole region. If the international community doesn't solve this problem, Israel will have to decide on its own. And I believe that Israel will have to do it. There is what I would call the Begin Doctrine. Menachem Begin was our prime minister from 77 to 83. And in 81, he made the decision to attack the Iraqi nuclear reactor. And he explained that Israel would not tolerate any of its enemies to have nuclear bombs in which they would threaten the existence of Israel. That was in 81. Last year, in September 2007, the Israeli Air Force knocked down with a tacit understanding with the United States, an effort by Syria to build a nuclear reactor on the banks of the Euphrates with the help of North Korea. And probably Israel will do it again to Iran if Iran is not stopped. Finally, can Israel do it? I think Israel is capable from the military point of view of achieving this goal. It would not be on the same scale as if America attacks Iran. America has bigger capabilities militarily and others, but Israel's, with its limited capabilities, military capabilities, with the Israeli Air Force, with the Israeli Navy, is capable of hitting 2, 3, 4 simultaneously sites in Iran in which they are developing their nuclear programs. And I think Israel will do it if the international community would not stop Iran of having nuclear weapons. Thank you.
I have a very quick question here. When we talk about the diplomatic and the economic means necessary to stop it before we think about a military attack, we certainly discuss about this later. But quickly, you've mentioned that some of the sites might be secret, and obviously also the problem is that some of the sites are underground.
Yes.
How well is the intelligence to really make sure that they can be hit well enough to stop the program, or at least to delay it for a considerable number of years?
I think that the answer is in your last remarks. Most of Israeli strategists don't believe that the Iranian program, if it is militarily attacked by Israeli forces, mm-hmm. if it is attacked by American forces, that's a different story. They are capable of endless sorties and air force sorties and ballistic missile attacks, and probably America can destroy all or major Iranian sites and to stop the Iranian program. With Israel, it is more limited, but and despite the fact that some of these sites, like Natanz, are deeply dug in the ground, still I think it is possible. Now, when I said that there are other sites which are secret and we don't know, it doesn't mean that the intelligence community doesn't know about their existence. And I hope so. I hope they would know about it. But from what I understand, it is sufficient to destroy 3, 4 sites which are known, and maybe 1 or 2 which we don't know about them, but they know, the intelligence community and the military planners, which would be sufficient to to halt Iran's nuclear ambitions for a while, for 3, 4, 5, or even 6 years. Now, what would be the ramification? This is another question, which I don't have the time now to discuss it. Okay. But we can say a lot about these ramifications. I mean, for sure Iran would try to retaliate. That's for sure.